Hi, everyone. Welcome to Potluck Food Talks. Today, we're recording in good old Copenhagen. And this will be our Noma after dinner review. We were in Noma last night. This is our hangover breakfast. And we're going to go dish by dish. You can also check out this content on YouTube to see the pictures of each dish we're going to talk about.
How do you feel?
Really nice. I think I don't have to think much to just say it was the best culinary and hospitality experience I've ever had.
Mm.
Like there's really nothing near it. Really like on a complete different level from everything I've seen before. I don't know how you feel about it.
Yeah, very similar. Very, very similar. And apart from that, I also don't feel, you know, like physically like bad. I feel like okay, because often when there's a menu with so many like fermented components, it was really interesting because for me, it was like, you often compare, you know, like Noma and El Bulli in a way, you know, after this like whole influence of Noma, lots of other restaurants around the world started implementing the same techniques and getting really fascinated by what they were doing. And this rise of like, especially in beverages, it's like fermented beverages and house fermented sort of like components of dishes started becoming more and more sort of present. And there's been more than a few meals where there were a lot of these sorts of elements that I then walked out of feeling like I was a fermenting cider barrel, you know?
I mean, like that's interesting because we haven't talked about it. Like, of course, there has always been fermentation. Fermentation predates humans. But in restaurants, besides sauerkraut, you wouldn't find much homemade ferments in restaurants, or at least it wasn't that common. It was something you would find once in a while in a restaurant somewhere. But Noma really like professionalized and developed methodologies or brought it to the restaurant environment so that everybody started fermenting all over the world in avant-garde restaurants. And I think that's one of the main contributions of Noma and the New Nordic as a movement.
Mm, absolutely. Yeah.
How did the night begin? We left here with a cab.
We left here with a cab with time to spare, just because we wanted to come on time, and also because you know the entrance to Noma is so beautiful. You know, it's like it's kind of cool because like as we were saying with Xander yesterday, he was like, "Oh, I didn't realize that Noma was inside of the city." But still, it doesn't feel like it's very inside of the city because you do drive out a little bit to the other part of town. It's kind of a little bit more industrial and it feels very set away. And like for me, like the excitement really started kicking in once we were in the cab and Xander was like, oh, it's over there. Or like, no, you said it. You're like, oh, it's over there. And then I started getting really giddy. I was like, oh, we're here, you know, like a child going to Disneyland or something like that.
And it was a really good idea to arrive half an hour early. Because we had like this waiting room that was already also part of the experience. We saw other parties that arrived directly to the table and they would be conducted directly to their table. While we had this waiting time and this, what was it, like an inside garden, something like that?
Yeah, a greenhouse.
A greenhouse, exactly. They had like this kind of habaneros, but these weren't no habaneros. What was the name? Lady Lisette.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a specific chili that looked really dangerous
that they crossbred. It's their own variety, as far as I understood. Yeah.
Mm, they also gave us like this tea. What was it exactly? It was jasmine with elderberry or something like that.
Yeah, jasmine and some other things that I missed. So just like a very light, sparkling, refreshing tea. And like what I liked also is kind of like you arrive there because they obviously they stagger. You know, important note for restaurateurs out there, stagger your reservations.
Also, you saw a friend walking in, which is what I said. It was this party and you were like, hey, Iñaki, what's going on?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of cool. It's kind of like I sort of half expected it. I saw a few people that I recognized that at the last days of this restaurant, you know, it's literally, what was yesterday? Wednesday.
Yeah.
They have two more services. That's it. You know, we had a third last service for them. In this sort of way. And of course, there's going to be a few people that want to be there from, you know, the industry that, yeah. I think Iñaki, I think he stashed at Noma for like a short time at some point. So yeah, but you know, everybody knows everybody, you know, it's just like with us.
Yeah, also the other parties that we saw, it was also interesting because you saw like this group of Germans, this group of Asians, I don't know where they were from. Dude, you can really feel that everybody's there for, like for a really important day, you know, it's not just like a casual going out thing.
No, 100%. Yeah, I think everybody that was there was aware that we're here to fully immerse ourselves in this experience, just be part of the last few dances here, because also they have this like thing where the kitchen greets everybody, you know, and etc. So if people just come whenever, you know, it's complete chaos, so it's very controlled. But also what I thought was really nice was that they immediately knew who we were. It's exactly those sorts of like cliche things, like when you see it in movies or in The Bear, for example,
yeah,
where they like overdo it with like the hand signals and like the little notes that they pass and stuff like
that. I really felt that was going on around
100%.
Yeah.
100%. And it's honestly, I've never seen a service this smooth. Also, like with like the way that they were communicating and how they were all up to date with what was going on.
But let's wait before we go into that, because we haven't entered the restaurant yet.
Yeah. No, sure. But I'm just saying that like immediately as we arrived, they made it so effortless because we sat down, we had microphones on, very small microphones, but you know, regardless. And the guy sort of like very casually while he was bringing us tea, so, oh, are the microphones for the podcast? You know?
Yeah.
And it's just like these small things that make you feel welcome and like in good hands straight away.
Yeah, I've heard that from people that have been, for example, at the Fat Duck, that they had just a conversation on the phone and then during the dinner, they bring that out like, and how was your holidays in Istanbul? Or these kind of things.
Yeah, it's
like they use the information they have about you to have a conversation during the meal.
Like the CIA.
The Culinary Institute of America?
No. No, but almost.
Yeah, as you were saying, the setting is really nice for you because you feel on the countryside, but at the same time, you have this industrial building just in front of you, like this. What is it? Is it like a trash processor or something like that here in Copenhagen? And it's
Apparently,
and it's an iconic building and also like an architectural icon, you know? Then we walked to the restaurant, which is like a long walk. How much? Like maybe 50, 100 meters or something like that. Like, would you walk at the side to the restaurant? So you see, because it's like a really long building. And that's also like I would say, a key moment of the experience. You have like on both sides this herbal garden, and you're walking in. It's just a way that only conducts to the main entrance of the restaurant. And we were fucking around with something. What was it that I had brought some ham for the team that you asked me to?
Yeah, of course. Well, like, hey, if you go to a restaurant of this caliber, it's nice to bring a present for the kitchen, you know? I mean, very traditionally, it's like a case of beer. But obviously, it's kind of difficult for Noma because it's like 40 chefs. It's like the guy was saying, it's like we're 85 members of staff. You know, like how many presents are you going to bring? But so Eric very kindly brought some ham from Spain for them to eat. We were joking that they'd be really pissed at the present.
You fucking morons, this is vegetable season.
You know, it's vegetable season.
Why are you bringing ham? We're vegan.
I'm sorry, shut the fuck up. Here's your fucking table.
Then it's when it real started, because we arrived at the door and we were really not expecting what was going to happen next, because you have to open the door yourself. And when you open it, just 1 second later, things start to happen one after the other.
Hello.
Hi.
Because it was like, boom, you open and they say, welcome. Then you listen to the background, there's a kitchen and there's like this instructions like, blah, 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 and the whole team, yes, blah, 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 yes, blah, 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 yes. And then they conduct you inside, and I was like, oh, we were like, you know, it was kind of awkward or intimidating. Yeah. And we were with the ham, like, oh, I have a present. And then the whole kitchen staff comes out and they align in front of you and they start to look at you smiling, welcome. Each one of them welcomes you. And I was like, what should I do with this?
Yeah.
You can give it to this guy. So I gave the ham to one of the chefs, and then we were conducted to the table. It was already prepared. I understand why you can't just walk in one by one, because there's this ritual of walking into the restaurant. So we sit down and there were already some produces that they were going to present us, like to explain us that these are things that are going to happen during the menu.
But they came like bam. Like,
yeah.
You know, like you walk in, like the intensity of like all the like chefs greeting you, and you could like, you know, that they need to get back to work also, but they're standing there and you could really see like they're briefed on this, that they're sort of like, when you stand there, like I can just picture it, when you stand there and you greet the guests, like don't just fucking stand there and be like, like look them in the eyes, and when they walk past you, say hello, welcome, you know.
Exactly.
And it was like that with every single person, like every single chef. I said like hi, like to, I think like 5-6 people. I'm like, hello. Yeah. Hello. 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 Very, very intense in a good way, like, especially when you get what's happening behind the scenes. And then, like, as you say, we sit down, you take in the dining room, which, by the way, is beautiful, you know, beautiful in the most simple way.
Yeah.
And so unique and expressive of like their style.
Very element driven, like yes. Wood, herbs, plants,
loads of
stone.
Plants. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really, really beautiful. And then suddenly you sit down and it's like you can just tell that they're ready to go. They're like ready to go to give you the brief. But yet again, when she was explaining the ingredients to us, it didn't feel like a script. It didn't feel rushed. Like, it felt very, very effortless.
That's also something that was during the whole meal, like the pace of everything, especially when people are talking to you. Like, they're talking on a specific pace. They're not rushing, they're not pausing, they're just being normal, you know?
Yeah, but even like a few times when I thought like, oh, like he or she would kind of like rip off the conversation, and she just kind of casually said something else, and it felt kind of nice, you know? Because like, I wouldn't have been upset if she would have been like, yeah, yeah, exactly, you know, like pick up something that you say, be like, yeah, yeah, you're right, that's really funny, haha, and then continue. But no, she like actually then went on more, and it gave you this feeling of, there's no time pressure. Yeah. Like, and they're in control, everything's fine. And it's amazing level of service, honestly.
So as I said, we sat down and they have all of these produce, some vegetables. The most interesting one was this peach tree resin.
Yeah, resin. Yeah, resin. It's basically like the...
Looked like dinosaur eggs or something, like the thing that you see in Jurassic Park, like these orange stones. What else did they have? Green rice.
Green rice.
Black oyster mushroom.
Black king oyster mushroom that they brought from the block as a like a whole thing to see how it's growing, to present basically the...
Exactly. They were homegrown mushrooms.
Yeah.
What she was explaining, there was like an ant walking. Ah, look, that's an ant, but that's part of nature. And then it started climbing on my plate and she was like, okay, get out of here.
But I noticed that like also because there were like wasps flying through the restaurant a little bit, you know, especially in the evening when like the windows, because in the beginning the windows are open and you're sitting there with this beautiful wildflower field, which again is very beautifully curated. I noticed this especially because I have a passion for horticulture. And as you know, I spent some time like actually studying horticulture and stuff. And these type of like arrangements that look like a very wild wildflower bed, but are actually curated different plants that are like set at different levels. Super beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. But it really looked wild. But you can tell that was a bouquet.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like different levels, different textures, different colors. Absolutely stunning. And I really like the fact that it's like there's an ant walking around the table, and it's not like in other restaurants it would be like, oh my god, there's an ant, you know. But there it's kind of like, man, we're in the garden, we're in nature, you know. Like there's a fucking ant, you know. It's because there's a fucking nasturtium flower right here that we're showing you, and of course there's an ant in there. They always hide in nasturtium flowers, you know. It's notorious.
So then we were asked about the drink pairing, and we went for because we didn't wanted to get like super drunk, so they offered us. We could have a wine pairing, sake pairing, or non-alcoholic pairing, and or a mixture. So we went for the mixed pairing. Yeah. We allowed them to choose how to build it, but...
A hybrid, as Xander called it. Yeah. Hybrid pairing.
Yeah.
That was a perfect choice.
Yeah.
That was a perfect choice.
Yeah, because the non-alcoholic were so interesting, probably even more interesting than the wines and sakes we had.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the wines and sakes were, of course, excellent wines and sakes, but I would say the most memorable ones were some of the non-alcoholic drinks.
100%. I mean, just from the creativity point of view, you know, but which pairing do you think worked the best for you?
I don't know if the pairing, but the drink that I remember the most, it was this... pollen, honey, kombucha with saffron. Yeah. That was incredible.
That was crazy. That was so nice. For the main course, we had sake.
Yeah.
That worked.
That like worked.
Flavor, so for that wise, it worked amazing.
There was also like a wine, the oxidated wine.
Mm.
That was also like a super one.
That's true. That fit really, really well. Yeah.
So then first course arrives. And then that's also something that I got really impressed, like how the service performed. Because these were all the time like invisible hands putting things and taking things away from your table. But the moment that they would set the plates, it was perfectly choreographical. They were two standings, one on one side. One would put like the thing that you put under the plate and the other one would come just 1 second later. Never more than 1 second. It would be like a ballet, you know, like pang, yes. pang. Then you had all the dishes and then everything arrived. Same thing. When dishes would arrive, it would never be that, you know, like I would have a plate, you're waiting, and then the other one comes. It would be like the three things at the same level of timing. And first course was the kohlrabi shawarma.
Yes, which is a smaller version of an old vegetable main course that used to do the celeriac shawarma. Basically, layers of kohlrabi, as they explained, some dried, some fermented, some fresh, stacked, cut, skewered, and grilled, and glazed. As we later found out, there was the peach tree resin in between the layers of the kohlrabi. This kohlrabi, it came with some fresh white currants on the side, some nasturtium flour, and glazed in the truffle sauce. And on the side, you had pickled pine cones like olives and these preserved beans and little sandwiches of oregano. Yeah, leaves.
But these were like meaty, thick oregano leaves, yeah. like almost like succulent plants.
Yeah.
And this was filled like with a kind of like a salsa of herbs, like of wild herbs.
And you had
this,
sort of.
Yeah, so you had this sandwich of leaf, herb paste, and another leaf.
Yes.
And they told us to mix it all together.
Yeah.
Have fun.
Which was really fun.
It was really fun.
Yeah. And it was really cool because it was so layered. And because you would have a bite with, you know, some of the olives. You'd have a bite with a little bit more of the currants that gave you this like acidity kick. And that's kind of like the first dish really kicked off the tone. It wasn't like a small kind of bite. It was already like a very nice warm welcome. And it immediately set the tone for the flavor profiles that we were going to encounter.
Did you mention the truffle sauce?
Yes.
It was like a very buttery truffle sauce around the kohlrabi shawarma. And yeah, the fun thing about it was, as you say, like a little bit of this, a little bit of that, you mix it all together, you take just one, just two, you know, like different combinations of the same components.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds like very in your face, truffle and this and that, but all the flavors are very mellow and very elegant and very, very harmonious. And that's something we said the whole meal through.
Exactly. It was not like this, here, truffle, bam, like, wow.
Like, know, fermented pine cones, like, bam, in your face.
No. Exactly. Like the subtleness of everything. I would say even the first tea that we had on the waiting, it was already setting the tone of this subtleness that you will find all over the menu starting from there.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So next dish, what was it? Ah, sorrel noodle soup.
Ah, yes. Also very interesting, very beautiful presentation.
Yeah, like you had like, so first of all, the plate was a cube of ice, a block of ice with a oval hole in it where you had like this soup and three clover leaf shaped noodles.
Yes.
And yeah, this was very refreshing, very citrusy, lemony, Granny Smith apple, like those kind of notes.
Yeah. The noodles are made kind of like a mochi, made out of kuzu and fermented honey. Then you had this tiny dollop of like fresh cheese underneath each noodle, very beautifully plated, like very round. I was kind of like, how did I get it to stay so round, you know? And the soup, as you were saying, like, made of sorrel and for sure green apple. And because it was plated in the ice, you were eating it like a soup out of this ice bowl. It was very, very refreshing. The noodles had a really pleasant, chewy texture. The fresh cheese wasn't salty or sweet or anything. It just had a very comforting fattiness to it that really went well with the like really refreshing soup. Yeah, all in all. You also had a little bit of clover and like flowers on the side that you were meant to kind of eat off the stem as you were eating the soup, which also was really, really nice. And I love that there are these like hand eating elements where you like pick and make your own dish, which is very interactive and always makes it very fun.
Yeah, what I liked the most or what impressed me the most was the chewiness of those noodles. It was really like, I don't know, like a soft gummy bears kind of thing, like a soft udon something, you know, like.
Yeah, udon texture kind of Yeah, really, really nice. That was more of a textural dish. It was very light.
And refreshing.
Very, very refreshing. Yeah, absolutely.
Next dish, we had the seaweed salad.
The seaweed wraps, yeah.
That was crazy. Like, this, like, so far, like, the other things were kind of, like, familiar flavor spectrums. Mm-hmm. But this one was the first one that went into, a complete unknown realm, you know?
Yeah,
like,
because of the sauce, I think. Yeah, the sauce was really, really trippy, in a way. Like, it kind of tasted very mildly like truffle. And they said it was made of seaweed. It was a seaweed and truffle sauce. But like it had a layer of fat on top of it, like an oil, very thick and kind of splitting as you were kind of stirring it. So it had this like really weird lava lamp texture. Again, this like overlying theme of sort of like fattiness without being heavy, deep umami with hints of acidity. And I could have sworn there was some sort of elderflower, like vinegar or something in there, because it had this like, and then this like floralness that sometimes comes through a rose or through a jasmine or through this or through whatever, through geranium, or I don't know, you know?
Yeah, I remember it also felt like, I thought of mustard oil because of the oiliness of the sauce. It was like a kind of like a thick vinaigrette thing.
Yeah.
And that combination of seaweed with flowers and mustard, and yeah, it was something I've never experienced. And it was quite nice. I think that was the most interesting thing, having that feeling of, what is this? You know, you can't frame it into any tradition of any kind.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there were little wraps made with kelp seaweed, oyster leaf, a horseradish cream and beach mustard flowers, which had a great texture and were very refreshing in their temperature, in their texture, and in their like very fresh taste. The horseradish and the mustard, they came through not as like potently spicy, but just as in like spicy refreshing. And together with this like velvety sauce, which again is like a texture that I found a few times. It's like velvety sauce. It was very fun to eat. It was very refreshing and light.
Yeah, and I have here peach flowers in my notes.
Beach mustard.
Beach mustard.
Beach mustard. They're okay. Like, it's like this like mustard thing that like grows on the beach, and you can eat the flowers. They're like nice and pungent.
Yeah, and it really had like this kind of like game where you don't know what you're going to find in mm-hmm. each thing that you're trying. Then this is something else.
Because they don't tell you about it, though.
Yeah.
Also, it's what Kevin was telling us. He was like, we don't tell you all the stuff that's in the elaborations, because otherwise it would just be like in this koji and that koji and this tamari and this reduction and this vinegar.
Exactly. And
you don't want to hear that. Yeah.
Next.
Ramsan.
Yeah. Koji wrapped in ramsan.
Mm. Yeah. So basically, barley koji cake, as they called it. They brought out the whole koji thing. Wrapped in a piece of ramsan, wild garlic, grilled. And then next to that, you had some orpine, which is a crispy leaf, also with like a little rose petal or something and like some herbs inside. I feel like they were like, I don't know, like something lemony. You had a fried ramsan flour, and you had a little bit of daikon oroshi, grated daikon radish on the side. What did you think of this one?
Incredible. Like, first of all, the ramsan tasted... It was kind of like it tasted like meat, but like this Germanic or Nordic kind of sausages.
It had this kind of funk to it.
Yeah, like this, maybe I would say oversmoked that you find in Central Europe.
Yeah.
So it really reminded me of these smoked sausages with the koji inside. So super strong umami. What else we had? The horseradish. Yeah, it was kind of like a vegetable... hot dog, like from the inspiration point of view, you know, like...
It's interesting, yeah, maybe. Yeah, like the taste of grilled sausage was really cool, I think. It was like, and again, it had this like fattiness, umaminess. It had this like flavor, I don't know where it came from. And with these like punches of acidity, you know, again.
Yeah.
And like every now and again... And super, super interesting. Really, really. It had this like almost like when I say funk, I mean like, you know, like how a really nicely fouet has a funk, you know, this like Edelschimmel kind of situation.
Yeah. Also interesting on this dish is the cutlery that they brought. It was this.
This prison shank.
This prison shank that really looked like a homemade weapon in jail. A super primitive and sharp knife to cut the ransom, and it really added to the experience of enjoying the dish.
Honestly, everything added to it, like cutlery and plate wise, everything added to it. Yeah. Beautiful plates. I think every time we got a new plate, because we're into ceramics and cutlery and all that sort of stuff, every time they brought something new, it invited you to pick it up, to look at it, to enjoy the texture, you know. Even the chargers, you know. The chargers are the plates that you put the plate on, right? So it stays on your table, which we had quite a long time. Like, they were just really, really beautiful.
So, and again, we had like this succulent leaf that it was, again, like a leaf sandwich. And what was the flour in the middle? I don't remember.
Fried ramen flour.
Yeah, and a fried flour. That reminded me of, you know, zucchini, fried zucchini flowers or these kind of things.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Next dish. Wow, this was one of the highlights.
This was one of the highlights.
And I like how they put it on in the menu. Today's crudité.
Yeah, that's it.
That's it. Wow, what can we say about this?
One of my favorite dishes from
tonight. For sure. And so we have here, I don't know, at least, I couldn't say how many, because if you count like the little leaves, it could be 20 different vegetables and fruits and leaves and flowers, probably even more. And on the bottom, there was this smoked umami-rich kind of soup, and it had something else, right?
It had chili oil, it had smoked tomato. But the sauce on the bottom, it had like chili oil, I think, on top. And the sauce on the bottom, I don't know if it was the tomato, but I feel like it had some sort of like, I don't, in the beginning I was like, is this buttermilk? And then I was kind of thinking, maybe it's just green tomato smoked and then emulsified with something to get the creaminess, mm-hmm. you know? But what was amazing about this dish is like the quality of the ingredients, and they like left supernatural. But it was so nice because you had such a huge variety, and you had strawberries inside there also. And then you had like whole basil leaves and basil flowers and whole little like tips of fennel flowers. And so as you were eating this dish, you know, you had such an oyster leaves and stuff. You always had like a different punch. You had this like really beautiful vegetable texture, crunchiness in different levels, and herb punches that as you were chewing, they were like coming through and punching through. And then bound together by this super delicious, warming umami sauce / soup.
The sauce made the dish, for sure.
Yeah, 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 absolutely.
For me, this completely brings me to Michel Bras Garrigou or Mugaritz Garrigou. And then in Mugaritz, they would do it like with this strong Emmental sauce under this herb salad that you had many different herbs and a strong Emmental umami ridge. And in this case, it was like smoked tomato umami, but I like that it's more organized, that many of the vegetables are repeated. It's not like you have, you know, just once zucchini and then you have 45 different vegetables. In this case, it was repeated, so you would have written while you eat that you would have like the same thing once in a while, the same of it again. Everything's so carefully sliced. I have a picture of like a micro zucchini that was just sliced like an abanico, you know, like really crazy.
Yeah, she was saying that it takes them 20 minutes to assemble these dishes.
Yeah. Yeah, that they have a competition of who plates it faster, like inside the kitchen. Yeah, one of the highlights for sure. And here I also have... Did we already have like the red soft drink here?
Yes.
It was the Suna kombucha with gooseberry. Yeah. What else did it have?
Rose.
Incredible.
Mm-hmm.
This one, also one of the highlights of the drinks.
Yeah, for sure.
For the Venezuelan audience, it reminds Sander and me to Frescolita, but like in a very organic way. But yeah, it was kind of that.
Noma Frescolita.
No, organic Frescolita.
All right, next dish, the nasturtium dumpling with quail egg.
Wow. And I was really impressed by what the guy told us when we were leaving, that dish has 57 ingredients.
Insane. Like, what the fuck? So basically, it's like a little, almost like a soup dumpling, but the outside is made of nasturtium leaves that are somehow, I don't know, like layered and like stuck together and compressed somehow. And then inside you have a soft boiled quail egg. And outside, on the flat side of this dumpling, which gets broad and is like beautiful, sort of like flower pots with leaves, and it's kind of standing in the middle, it's a couple of aromats, pine needle, Sancho pepper, and some other things. And inside of this like dumpling must have been a couple of ferments also. It was almost like you had to eat it in one go because the egg was like, underneath was a little bit of like egg yolk sauce, but I'm not sure whether that was just to stick it on or whatever.
And actually it was this vegetable jamon.
Yeah, it was a vegetable ham. Which if somebody told me, I'm going to make a vegetable ham, I'm going to put pepper and asparagus, I'd be like, man, shut the fuck up, you know? Yeah, it's true. It's like a BCC student. So it's like, okay, listen, I'm going to make vegetable ham. I'm going to put this. And then the fat's going to be asparagus. I'd be like, man, get the fuck out of here, you know?
But it was
learn how to cook.
Yeah. That's really what I cook, you know? But I mean, if they would leave the white asparagus out and use the pepper and forget the mimetic play of it, for me, it would have worked maybe even better, you know?
You think so?
I mean, I'm just speculating.
I mean, honestly, they didn't even... I thought it was kind of cool. Like, I looked at it and I was like... Because it wasn't, like, in your face either. It's not like, oh, this is our vegetable ham. They just said, oh, you have, like, red pepper and white asparagus, blah, and you look at it and you're like, oh, it kind of looks like ham.
You have to figure it out yourself.
And that was kind of smart because like if they would have told us, it would have become gimmicky, but no. And yeah, the pepper, it tasted like it had a texture like fruit leather, like almost like fruit leather and ham had a baby, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, and it was smoky, it was sweet, it had a miso flavor because it was cured, you know? It's, and it had like pepper on it. Mm-hmm. Which then again, afterwards came through. And I mean, it did fulfill the same functions basically as like a slice of like cured meat would. But it was very fun to eat and very delicious.
Yeah, it was very peppery, like normal red pepper. Also with some hints of kind of piquillo pepper, it reminded me.
Yes.
And yeah, and this leathery, chewy texture to it. Super nice.
Yeah.
So what's next?
What's next? The potato soup and the butterfly flatbread.
Ah, okay. Also one of the highlights.
Mm, yeah.
You were expecting the potato soup. You were like, probably the potato soup is next. And that's exactly what it was.
Yeah, I mean, it's so iconic. I mean, like, I think he used to call it the Nordic coconut. He used to have this, like, whole kohlrabi with the leaves and, like, the same sort of straw. You get, like, but now it's a potato, which I think is even cooler.
Yeah, because...
it's so weird. It's like, you get a potato in dirt.
How many chefs can do that? Like... elevate potato to that level and serving like you know this big Dutch potatoes in the middle of a 3-star restaurant with a straw, you know, it's really audacious to do something like that.
And it's also the association, because raw kohlrabi is fine, raw potato is not fine. Mm-hmm. You know. Mm-hmm. So which I also thought was pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. Mm. The potato soup, again, I thought it was going to be, like, clever. I thought it would be, like, a cold potato soup with, like, you know, because there was elderflower in it and stuff. But it was a warm potato soup. It was a little chunky also. Was yours chunky?
No, mine not.
Mine was a little bit chunky. Seasoned with elderflower.
Yeah, and this is something I couldn't expect to find, like, in any classic, for example, German restaurant.
Yeah.
That kind of potato soup. In that regard, it was not impressive, but for me, it was impressive that it was plated on a raw potato and it didn't have like starchy potato, starchy flavors or raw potato flavors anywhere. It was perfectly clean. I don't know how they did that, how they plated it in a raw potato without tasting like raw potato, you know?
Yeah, I think it's just like it's so a la minute. They fill it in, they serve it straight away. It's not enough time for the potato flavor to come out, I think.
I have no idea. Yeah. And I also don't know how they make that plate, like how they hold it like a coconut so it's empty and the inside, probably like some kind of special tool or way to take the...
I think so. You have these like little grinders, you know, they can go like, they can have like holes in wood and stuff.
Ah, with a parisienne or something like that.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, that's what I thought in the beginning, but that would take fucking forever, no? Yeah. Like, because I've done that before with stuff and it's like, you do that with apples and it's like, Jesus Christ, you know, you do that with a whole potato, let alone 85, like 90... a day? Nah.
To make a crab pie with apples.
Exactly, yeah. It's basically the same approach. I wonder where Rene got his idea from. Hey, hold on. Wait a second.
And next to the potato soup was one of the best dishes, I think. Also this butterfly, again, leaf sandwich.
Yeah.
And you had like this cracker on the outside and inside the, I opened it like a little bit and there was like a lot of things going inside there. There was like completely different components.
Again, like radishy, mustardy leaves, There was green strawberry inside.
Green strawberry, I have it here, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure there was some sort of tarragon oil also going on, like a green oil. It had a very particular kind of flavor. And really fun. I mean, really beautiful. It looks like a butterfly in flight and it gets brought to you in like a in a sunflower. And you're meant to pick it up and push it together and then just eat the thing. And just super tasty. Yeah. Really, really tasty. Again, yeah. With like hidden notes of acidity, fattiness, mustardy flavors.
And by this point, it was really interesting that I had already a couple of times repeated components, flavor profiles, like this horseradish. We already had it before in the garlic leaf with koji.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, we were already saying that you could really feel like a concept cohesiveness across the menu. That it felt like, let's say, a movie where there's this recurrent idea that you see over and over again, or a music album, like a really good music album, that you feel that the whole thing is one concept. Here you could feel the same thing, that many dishes were in kind of like in the same spectrum of flavors or ingredients, but there was always like a different angle, a different curve, a different approach each time you had like the same thing, but different, like in many courses.
Mm.
Especially with this leaves sandwiches or this herbal pastes and these kind of things.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's kind of what I teased earlier. This like velvety fattiness that was very comforting without being heavy or fatty, like fatty in a negative way. Just really kind of coating your tongue with this deep umami, floral sweetnesses, savorinesses from the ferments and from smokiness, etc., with acidity and floral notes, but everything so elegant, so like harmonious. I really expect this, like you're saying, it's kind of like, okay, like bam, nasturtium here and bam, horseradish there, and like your pine needle acidity here, bam, but everything was just so smooth, so elegant.
Yeah.
Really, really nice. I feel like I would like to believe that, because that, like we were talking about, that's like a very Japanese flavor profile.
I was going to say the same thing, that very high-end Japanese is very subtle, that you see it also with the tea, that you don't have this, here you have this over-infused tea that you feel the umami on your throat, you know, like it's just like very smooth, elegant teas.
Yeah, yeah.
Then next dish, this was also very interesting, talking about Japanese. This felt very Japanese to me. It was a king mushroom in this kind of like gelatin with a little marjoram foam, one of the favorite ingredients of the show, marjoram.
Yeah, marjoram and from our show. I thought you meant yesterday's show. But again, marjoram and oregano, a flavor that appeared many times,
mm-hmm.
many, many times. Like horseradish appeared many times throughout the meal. And I thought that was crazy because usually that's a no-no in high-level kitchens, repeating an ingredient.
Yeah, even so in...
You can't use tarragon here. You use tarragon in the starter already. You can't use it for the fish, you know. You already have tomato. You can, and I work the same way, you know. Like, I'm sort of like, we already have a tomato reduction here. I can't have a marinated tomato here, you know.
Yeah, but I think this actually enhances the experience. And I feel the same, and I had the same thought until yesterday.
Yeah,
I was like, okay, wow, they repeated ingredients, and that just added to the experience. It didn't take away from it, you know?
Yeah, because you see it, because it also makes sense, because it's like regional ingredients. It's like what's available to them, you know? Of course, they got to use it in different ways, you know? Like, why wouldn't you? You can use horseradish in a refreshing way. You can use it in a spicy, pungent way, you know? Yeah. Like, you can use it fresh. You can use it as an oil. Like, why not? It makes complete sense. And I think it's really cool.
But I remember when we worked with Hoffman, who was also like a very vegetable-driven chef, he had the same idea. Like, yeah, I have no problem with repeating ingredients across the menu. And this is a vegetable restaurant and we can use vegetables in different ways. I remember him talking about that.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, so this mushroom dish, it was the stem of the king oyster mushroom that we would then eat as a main course. And it was sliced in this very Chinese way where you take tofu and you put chopsticks and you slice very carefully, very straight down the tofu, bam, 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 all the way. And you turn it, you repeat the same process. And if you've done it correctly and you put this tofu in soup, it will open up all these like strands like a lotus flower. Or like a chrysanthemum, sorry.
Yeah, or like a brush, like a very, very gentle brush.
Which is a very, very difficult Asian technique that I've tried a few times. It's very hard to do. You can do it with different things. You can do it with radish also. The Japanese do it with radish, actually. There's a type of pickle where they slice radish in this sort of way, and then they pickle it, and it softens, and it opens up like this chrysanthemum flower. So that's the stem, kind of poached or whatever. Then covered in a mushroom gel, which we luckily figured out how to make between the three of us.
Chandler was eating with us, and he asked, how do you make a gelatin of pure mushroom?
No, because it was like implied. It was implied, like there's this mushroom, like this gelatin made out of mushroom. And I'm like, what do you mean made out of mushroom?
Exactly. Phil very kindly explained, you add gelatin to mushroom.
I should have asked, you know, by illusion.
Marjoram foam.
Marjoram oil and horseradish cream, yeah.
And the little white thing was horseradish.
It was horseradish and the oil was marjoram.
Ah, okay, but yeah. It was very marjoram.
It was very marjoram, yeah. But I also think that on the horseradish cream it had marjoram flowers.
Yeah,
because it had its pink flowers.
Yeah, because it was really like...
It was pungent, It was really pungent, yeah, absolutely. Very good. It was very comforting, homey. The wine went really well with it. It was like a sherry-like oxidated wine from Jura. Mm-hmm. It worked really well with mushrooms, yeah. But, I mean, very tasty, but not one of the highlights of the meal for me.
Yeah, next dish was one of the highlights for sure.
Next dish was an absolute highlight, yeah. I mean, this dish and the crudités were really the ones that made me stop while I was eating and be like, oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah, like, so next dish, we had like this, it was plated on leaves, so kind of like a bowl of leaves was like the plate, and you had like this snowball, I would describe it, like a snow cotton somehow, that you had to eat really quick because it would like... go away. It was basically like, it has this taste. They explained to us the name of the cheese. It was like a traditional Danish cheese that it resembles comté. To me, it also had like some hints of a very light kind of Parmesan-y thing.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, and this with yuzu, I feel like the cheese flavor was on the bottom and on the top was the yuzu. Yeah. And on top of it, it was like black yuzu. Like when you ferment black lemons, they explained to us that they do it there with, they leave it at 60 degrees for 2 weeks. Was that correct? Or 40 degrees?
60 degrees.
Okay. Because these are the ones that you can also do on the sun, just leaving them outside to the sun until they're black.
Yeah.
And there were like, just some little shapes of that on top. And the interesting thing about this is that it was strong cheese and refreshing at the same time. Super interesting dish.
Yeah, absolutely. An amazing dish because also it had this texture that would just disappear in your mouth. And the cheese had this like, you know, when you think of Parmesan, you think of salty umami, which it had, but in a very light, milky and refreshing way, you know. And the yuzu, although being black and fermented, a very strong, fragrant, pure yuzu flavor. Also on top was some like dried and I think smoked pumpkin, they said, like grated on top as well. I couldn't pinpoint that out. For me, the yuzu and the cheese were there, but it was like such a refreshing thing. You ate it and it was pretty much gone in your mouth, but you were left with these flavors, and it was a very, very refreshing experience with a very sophisticatedly light, ethereal flavor profile.
It's also interesting that they explained us that the chef that developed this dish, his name was Alvaro, if I'm not wrong.
I think so, yeah.
And that he worked tickets because this dish was very Albert Adriaish, you know, like this foam wine component. By the way, next time we do this, we should do this at Enigma. I think that this would be like a good place to go.
True.
Eat and have like a full review of the restaurant.
True.
Because those are like thought-provoking dishes for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, one of the highlights for sure.
This week, for sure. And again, so simple. Three ingredients. I mean, like main ingredients. Obviously, there's more ingredients to make this, but you know, I mean, mainly the cheese, the black yuzu, and the pumpkin. So smart and so emotionally evocative. Very, very crazy. Very cool.
Next dish, I would say very Japanese, very simple, very minimalistic. It was a marigold tempura. The whole flower pot, you would have like the whole flower completely fried. And next to it, like a cured egg yolk. And they told us what it had. It had a tamari.
Mushroom tamari and koji, I think. Koji, yeah, like, koji oil.
Yeah, this reminds me of this kind of Yoshihiro Murata egg yolk sauce marinated in soy sauce. But yeah,
but very light, very, very light, you know, no like crazy saltiness, no egg flavor. It had like a very nice sweetness, the sauce. And it had these like, because when I was tasting it, it had, obviously it was cured and had these notes of like fermented barley and stuff like that, which you usually get in these like very high quality, super light soy sauces that normally you don't see outside of Japan at all. Ongayashi, I think it's called. It's like, I used to use this super light soy sauce and you could drink it like a tea almost, you know, like a spoon. See-through like a tea, you know, like light brown. A little bit salty, but like nutty and really, really nice for seasoning soups and stuff. Amazing, right? It has nothing to do with like the Kikkoman soy sauces that are like, they serve their function as well, but it's kind of like you add a little bit too much into a soup, it's fucked, right? And yeah, it was like, again, so elegant. And marigold tempura, marigold has a very, there's different types of marigold. Some are intensely flavorsome, like biting into tangerine skin. Like very overly floral. But this one just had a very lovely floralness to it. It was sprinkled with saffron and coriander seeds, which also are like very in-your-face ingredients. But the nutty, sweet floralness of the saffron and the coriander just kind of blended into the whole thing. Very delicious.
Exactly. The sauce was so good. It was a dipping sauce. It was kind of like a very light mayonnaise that we drank it like a shot.
Because you know, that's the sort of people we are.
Yeah, they like
There's
it.
There's no shame here.
They like it. By the way, this we didn't pick up his name, but this Greek guy from service, he was so cool, so kind.
Andrea, I think. Andrea.
Shout out to Andrea, the Greek guy from Noma.
He did a fabulous job.
He liked seeing us drinking the sauce.
Yeah. I mean, not to toot our own horn, but I think we were fun guests. Maybe a little bit too loud at times, but we were just laughing our ass off.
Nah, we were not alone on that. Next one, this was a very fun dish. Grilled peas from the pot.
Simplicity perfected. Peas opened surgically with the peas still attached to the pot, grilled almost like you would grill langoustines in a shell or oysters.
Yeah.
With a sauce made from pine needles and horseradish again.
Yeah,
a very sweet, umami-heavy sauce with hints of smokiness and the sweet peas that you would have to kind of take in the shell and like scrape the peas off with your mouth, eating it with the thing, and then throwing the shells into the middle, like if you're at a crab boil or something like that.
Yeah,
amazing,
super nice, super straightforward. Also, I like what you said, that it's fun to have dishes where you have to throw the shells to the middle. Like this act of eating and throwing the shells is. It's also something like really, I don't know, that evokes something in your memory that reminds you of whatever, eating prawns at the beach or something like that.
And you're in touch with the produce, like you appreciate it more than if you just take it with like a knife and fork, and like it's a different kind of experience. It's more involved, right? Obviously, but you take the shell and you put it to your mouth, etc. I mean, you know, people who take that to an extreme, Mungarits, you know, when they say, okay, yeah, I want you to snork the salad off this like ice face, right? And you're involved with it, right?
Or Boy Innovation, when they say you have to take this used condom and put it in your mouth.
Yeah. Next dish.
Artichoke heart and padron pepper.
Both grilled.
This felt very Italian to me.
You were saying that, yeah.
Yeah, like it reminded me of Italian flavor profiles because it had this foam. Again, like there was no cheese in it, but with the umami and floral notes, it evoked somehow, again, this parmesan-y thing. With artichokes and peppers, come on. Like that's as Italian as it gets.
Yeah. And it's just like such a cool dish, like the padron pepper and the artichoke heart, both grilled, jasmine butter sauce foamed up. The padron pepper was covered in basil flowers, and then there were nasturtium petals kind of scattered around the plate. And like you say, like the fact that the vegetables were grilled, it gave them such a umami boost. The sauce was floral, salty, like tasty, fatty. And then the flowers not just gave the flavor, because obviously basil flowers are very strong, nasturtium flowers have a sort of spiciness, but they also gave this like crunchy texture to the whole thing.
That's also something I wanted to mention that I mentioned yesterday, that it was really interesting that many, if not all of the dishes had flowers, or most of them, and you could really taste the flowers, which is something that, like, these crappy flowers that you buy on restaurant suppliers just to make a decoration, they don't taste like anything. They're just to add a visual to the dish, and they taste like grabbing flowers from an urban garden and putting them in your mouth. These flowers were highly aromatic. And some of them, they would squeeze micro dots of sauces inside the flowers. Come on, like, how?
Oh, yeah, that had me tripping, actually. Like, you bite into the flower and you're like, what the fuck? That's not just a flower. There's something inside of here. But they didn't tell you.
We haven't talked about the environment that the kitchen expressed to the dining room.
Wow, yeah, intense, huh?
Yeah,
intense.
Because I said yesterday, it reminded me of this army of mercenaries in Game of Thrones. You remember the ones that had like spears and were like, whoa,
you know, like. Yeah, true. Oh yeah, those guys. Yeah. Ah, I know, the Unsullied. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it reminded me. Have you ever seen The Last Samurai with Tom Cruise?
Yeah.
You know the scene in the beginning where he's there in the very beginning with the like army he's supposed to train, and they meet the samurais for the first time, and they come. You see them break through the fog.
Yeah.
On there with their fucking demon helmets and masks, and they're like, doo, 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 doo.
So first of all, you would not for a single second find a chef looking nowhere. Everybody was looking down to whatever they were doing with absolute focus, and just like whatever they were doing, like plating or taking. What was that? I think it was like rosemary flowers out of rosemaries one by one with very delicacy. And you could feel the pressure if you started to hear more and louder yes, because it was yes, yes. And as it get higher, you would say, oh, okay, something happened. Somebody's angry.
Yeah, you could tell that the two head chefs, they were like electric in the beginning. I mean, in a way that was almost a little bit too much, you know. It's just like, I mean, I get it's like the whole thing, but it was sort of like, afterwards he came like to the table again, he was kind of like, how was everything? You could tell he was more relaxed, but in the beginning, you know, he brought a dish and he was like, yeah, so this is, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, is everything okay? Yeah, cool, yeah, all right. Just like fucked off again, which like is part of the experience and like wasn't uncomfortable or anything, but it was just funny. It's just noteworthy.
I mean, yeah, it's like a football match, you know, they're playing their match and things happen. Sometimes you're about to get a goal or something, so you have to push back and you could feel it.
They're at the top of the game. It is what it is, you know, like they have to fucking deliver every fucking day. Every night is finals, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get it. We've been there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Game on.
Yeah, like that regarding the kitchen and then the service, as I said, like they would, I think the pace, the way they would talk, the way they would take time to explain, it felt really, really nice. For some reason, they didn't know we spoke Spanish, because if they knew, probably some of them would have spoken Spanish to us, but they spoke in German, they spoke in English, they spoke in different languages.
Yeah, you could tell they sent one of the chefs to us, because which is also a cool thing to do, because like they knew we were coming from Berlin. It's a little thing. And it was really cool.
Next dish was the South baked black oyster mushroom and tomato salad. This was the main course. Yeah.
Yes. So, I mean, great dish. A very beautiful umami mushroom flavor. The salt baked mushroom baked whole, then sliced as it seemed. Mushroom had a very nice, crunchy, toothsome texture, as mushrooms sometimes have. The green rice inside was very nice.
Yeah.
And the sauce, again, very fatty, with a dashi reduction mixed into it, which gave it this really beautiful ham, umami, mushroom flavors.
Very comforting.
Yeah, next to it was this tomato salad with mirabelles, herbs, again, fried flower buds.
Fried with buckwheat, some of the flowers, with like a buckwheat paste.
Super nice. And yeah, again, this, I think that was like the binding element of the whole experience. It was like this freshness of herbs and fruits and acidity with strong umami profiles, and that mixture of both things, that was kind of like the opera thing that came back and forth through the whole dance.
Yes, and I mean, he paired a sake with it, which was which was perfect, because he told us it was like quite intense, intense sake. And he said, just take a few sips first. It was quite alcoholic as well. And it had that deepness that mushrooms have, you know, just like deep flavor. In the beginning, like it was a dish that like grew on me. Not that I didn't like it in the beginning, but it grew on me more and more the more I was eating it. And the more I was eating the sauce and the rice that soaked up the sauce and very, very small grains of rice, very interesting. And the mushroom, and it wasn't like in your face, crazy, this, that, blah, but just very comforting, very deep flavor, very complex without being over the top. I think that's actually a good, you know, it was all very complex without being like in your face, over the top. Yeah. And then the dessert started.
Yeah. Magnolia popsicle.
Magnolia popsicle, yeah. Also, as a very beautiful, my least favorite of the three desserts, but very beautiful presentation. Came on like a branch, like a magnolia bud. You had the like magnolia petals, and inside was an ice cream made with gammeldansk and milk crumble, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, and I remember there was something we never asked, but there was something crunchy which was a milk crumble, but there was also something very aromatic, very like a spice or something that I never know what it was.
Yeah, absolutely. It had like very light, milky flavors of tonka and rose.
Exactly. Yeah. That's absolutely it.
And yeah, kind of like vanilla-y caramel notes from the crumble, I felt like. In general, very fun to eat off the branch, but very milky, very soft.
The least favorite for me too.
Yeah.
Maybe from the overall menu, I would say.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah. Which is not to say much, because it was still great.
Yeah. And I mean, same as in like in a movie or an opera, you can't have just tens. Sometimes you need to have like a seven to have like a stronger impact on the next one. So next course, we had like grilled roses with a mixture of different berries. And in the middle, it was again like a rose cream.
A grilled rose ice cream. And on top was like a yuba, a milk skin.
Exactly.
Yeah. What did you think of it?
I really like this one. Mm. Like
pure.
Very light, very pure. Yeah, the low sugar as well. Like you would enjoy the natural sweetness of the fruits. I would say that happened with the three main desserts, not the extra one that we got.
Well, I thought here also, like, I like desserts that are not too sweet. And also with like ice creams and stuff, I like it when it's not too sweet.
Yeah.
It's nothing worse than just like berries with sugar. And like the yuba, it had like a toothsome texture. For people who don't know, yuba is like traditionally made with soy milk. You boil soy milk. A sheet forms on top. You carefully lift it off with a stick and you dry it. It's a very traditional Japanese ingredient, yuba. They do the same thing for many years now with milk. They started doing that in Noma, I believe. Milk skin, take a toothpick or whatever, like a long skewer at one end, pick it out in whole as a whole and hang it up to dry. And rose ice cream, again, very subtle. The mixture of berries. I remember, like, it was cool because Xander was saying stuff like, oh, I think there's basil inside. And then I was kind of eating it. There was, like, one berry, which is, like, a mulberry that in combination has, like, a very floral sweetness in combination with the rose. I was like, oh, yeah, you're right. It does taste like fresh basil flower or whatever. Really, really nice. But very understated, very, very Scandinavian in a way, like a berry bowl with, like, milky stuff, you know, like cold skull.
Yeah,
kind of that sort of vibe. Very good. And then the last dessert was definitely my favorite dessert. I mean, the presentation, the act, and but then also the flavor combination.
I don't have pictures of this one.
No?
It was bee pollen, saffron, and sea buckthorn.
I know why you don't have a picture of this one, because you had a whole dessert panic.
I had a whole dessert panic?
Yes, because you took the whole dessert and you started shaking it.
Yeah, now I remember.
So,
No, don't do it like that.
So what came was like a little, almost like a jewelry box made from beeswax. And the top had a handle that was a poppy flower, a dried poppy flower with the poppy seeds inside. And so what you were meant to do is pick up this flower, lift off the lid to reveal underneath a very beautifully plated dessert of a Woodruff cream with a paste of hazelnuts and dried berries and bee pollen. Then you would meant to take the flour and shake it on top of the dessert to basically like a salt shaker, shake the poppy seeds over the dessert, and then you were going to eat it. Eric misunderstood the instructions.
No, you also helped me miss it.
What was my fault?
No, I think Sandra said, like, turn the whole thing over and I just, yeah, whatever, like, go ahead.
And the waiter comes and he basically picks up the whole thing and shakes it like a fucking maraca or whatever.
No, don't do that.
And the waiter runs over, he's like, no.
That's not the way you do it.
That's not the way you do it. But yeah, very delicious, like
one bite,
simple in a way.
Lots of things going on.
The Woodruff, very beautiful tonka vanilla flavors. Then the paste, a certain salty fattiness from the hazelnuts and a certain sweet acidity from the dried beans. The bee pollen on top, again, sweetness in the flowers. And then two distinct bites for me. Because you've got these like beautiful little horn spoons to eat it with. I think I had the dessert in like 5 spoons in total. 2 of those spoons had a very strong punch of fresh acidity. And I don't think we're going to say... We asked our waiter what it was. He was reluctant to tell us because it was a secret. He did tell us in the end, but I think we'll abstain of that information.
Okay.
If he... he didn't want to tell us. He told us in confidence. So I don't know if we should publish it.
Yeah.
It was...
It's an ingredient that Noma was famous for. They used to use it a lot. And with the poppy seeds also adding a little bit of crunch, tonka vanilla cinnamon flavors. Very, very...
Very flowery again.
Very delicious.
Also, like, there was this component that was also all over the menu, also in the drinks, like honey, pollen, like, of course, these are, again, flowers, you know? Like,
yeah.
Is that like a flowery component?
Yeah, absolutely. And then we got a bonus dessert.
Again, honey.
Yeah.
A bonus dessert, which was one of my favorites, I think.
Yeah.
So it arrived and it looked like a slice of beeswax with the honeycomb shape. It had the same color also. And it was a cake made with white chocolate and it was filled with sea buckthorn and whiskey vinegar.
The whiskey vinegar was insane.
Yeah. So you would crack into this beeswax-looking thing, this honeycomb-looking thing, and inside would be almost like a mousse, which I guess is like white chocolatey mousse, maybe, and then like a liquid center of sea buckthorn and whiskey vinegar. And again, like the mixture of combinations, the mixture of flavors, they married in such a way that if you wouldn't have told me what was in it, I wouldn't have been able to pick it out.
I would have been sure that it had passion fruit.
Passion fruit, yeah. Yeah.
But it was this whiskey vinegar for sure, this acidity. But also when you transform a liquor into vinegar, some aromatic notes come out that weren't there before, that develop. And maybe there was something that resembles passion fruit for me.
Yeah, incredible. Like, really, really incredible. Yeah, it was one of my favorite desserts also.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
I think
it was my favorite dessert, for sure.
The one before that, the Woodruff cream, very tasty. But that's just because of also the novelty aspect of, like, how many times do you eat something and you're like, this is a flavor I've never had before? Because we've eaten in so many restaurants. We've cooked in so many restaurants.
This happened many times across the menu.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It was so unique. It had so much of its own character.
Yeah.
I did not expect it to be... I did expect it to have a lot of its own character, but I did not expect it to be so individually expressive while being so subtle and elegant and understated.
Yeah.
Incredible high-class cooking. And that is not even talking about the aesthetics.
Which are insane, right?
I mean,
aesthetically, it's stunning.
Yeah, like, I wasn't able to find, like, a single flaw, like, something like, this I didn't like, or... And I didn't like the plating, or I didn't like the way they served, or they did a mistake here or there. I couldn't find nothing anywhere. Yeah?
Yeah.
Where exactly?
They gave me sparkling water instead of still water.
I told them in the beginning still water, and then the first glass was still water, and then somebody gave me sparkling water. No.
And what else? Then we had, like, we were invited to take a walk in the garden with a cocktail.
Mm-hmm.
I had, like... It was like a Norwegian gin with fennel, exactly. And you had like a grass kombucha.
We had like a grass kombucha with chartreuse, green chartreuse.
Super nice.
Both delicious.
Yeah.
Absolutely delicious. And served perfect function. Again, interesting. Again, elements from the garden. Made sense, you know, digestive. Oh, we you know what we didn't talk about? The Koji coffee.
That was with the Lassezern, right?
Yes, with the Woodruff cream. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they like after like own they roast their own coffee. So they have this like cold brew that they mix with sparkling water. And on top of that they add a foam of lacto-fermented rose water. Super beautiful coffee with like really beautiful berry notes and floral notes. The rose water foam, again, you hear rose and you think, whoa, so I'm not going to be too strong, but it's just so light and floral that it just really ties in with these like floral coffee flavors. It was, it actually complemented the Woodruff dessert perfectly,
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then we had a walk in the garden. We could take a look at the test kitchen. Yes. And then we had like a tour through the kitchen, through the grill place, the different kitchens, the different workplaces. We had like a little bag with a souvenir with this wild rose. What is it? It's a vinegar. The menu also to have like the whole menu because it was very hard to keep track of. Like a small kitchen tour, which was also lovely.
Yeah, really, really lovely. Got shown a little bit the areas, explained how the whole restaurant is designed, that every room has like a different material. The main dining room is oak. Then another one is like Danish pine. Then like area for the waiters is concrete. The other area is brick. And it's, you know, very cool space.
Yeah.
Very, very cool space. 85 members of staff, front of house, back of house, kitchen porters, etc.
Yeah, half of the team is in Kyoto right now with our friend Kevin.
Doing the same shit there, like setting up this whole very unique operation. Crazy undertaking, yeah?
Absolutely.
Amazing experience.
That's it for this week's episode of Potluck Food Talks. If you like what we're doing, make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. You can also find us on Instagram and TikTok as Potluck Food Talks. The show airs every Monday.